This is the 1895 Podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Talca Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 Podcast, the official podcast of your League of Ireland Premier Division Champions 2024, Shelburne Football Club. As always, Ben is with me. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Doody.
And we have another little guest who popped in just to keep us on the straight and narrow. There's potential for this pod to turn into a bit of a... And now on to the liars. So we brought along the head of media communications, Darren Cleary, to keep an eye on us. Hello, Dazzler.
Hello, Stephen. I'm here to settle scores and gloat. So
your WhatsApp message you sent me the other day was, have you recorded the podcast yet? And I said, no, not yet. Why? And you said, because I want to come on and glow.
I will be there to tell everyone how happy we are.
Yeah, so. Before we start recording, I said, right, how's this going to go? It's basically just going to be happy, happy, joy, joy for as long as we can do. The Reds are the champions, top of the pile, back at the top table, back playing Champions League football next season. All thanks to Harry Wood Tap-In. Ben, I'll go to you first because I always go to you first. Talk me through Friday.
Where do you start? It's just it's a pack of nerves all day, isn't it? I kept trying to tell myself every week on the pod, I really positively, we'll be grand, we'll do it, it's in our hands. But then when it actually comes to the day of the game, you just shit yourself immediately. I'd say we're about an hour away from Derry and there wasn't a word said in the car.
Yeah, the car was full of kind of the usual crack, and then it just, when you start seeing the miles per hour road signs, I think everyone got a little bit jittery, a little bit nervy. And Dazzler, when we got into the ground, I had this very fake, false smile on my face because I didn't want anyone to look at me, even though I was gauntly white in the face with nerves. I was trying to put up this front, being, no, we're fine. This is absolutely fine, but I wasn't fine, and I'm presuming you weren't either.
I was trying to do the brave face. I spent every day of the last few weeks publicly and privately saying that, here, we're going to win the league. It's fine. Don't be worried or stressed. My feeling on it was like, if reality says differently, will you be miserable for long enough afterwards? So why worry about that outcome while there's possibly still the fairy tale ending? So I was very upbeat, optimistic the whole way. I was just not thinking of any other way in which we'd leave Derry without the trophy. It just felt like it had to be for us. And we arrived into the ground, and as usually is, everyone kind of goes their separate ways because they have separate things to do when you get there. And the first face I saw was Stewie Byrne, and Stewie was white as well. Like, he was nervous. He was like, Jesus, this is big. If it goes the right way, it could be seismic, you know, the best ever potentially. And Stewie put my mind at ease because he was, he'd been there and done it, and he was like, the group was good enough to do it. And I think seeing Stewie probably was a helpful first face in the ground, because you just don't really know what mood you want to walk around in. Like, you don't want to walk in there arrogant and, you know, in any way disrespectful. You don't want to walk in there sheepish. So seeing Stewie probably helped balance it, and feeling like, yeah, look, it's one game of football, it's 90 minutes, it's a clean sheet and one goal away from winning it all. And as it happened, that's the way the night ended.
I don't know what you think, but I don't remember any of the game at all. Couldn't tell you a single thing that happened in that game other than the goal. Don't know whether I'm alone in that, but it was, from what I can remember, we played well. We've probably done enough to win two games of football. But again, Ben, I'll go back to you. That moment when Brian Maher doesn't do great, in fairness, with the free kick, and it falls in the box, and time kind of just stands still. What's going through the brain?
Just let the ball hit the net. That's all I was thinking. Fall to someone, I don't care. Like, at that point, I didn't care as long as the ball ended up in the net. And, like, you'll back me up on this as well, Doody, Dar as well. There was just that 10 seconds after the ball goes in where we all just kind of look around and we don't really know what to do, because where we are sitting, it's very difficult to celebrate that goal.
Yeah, for anyone that doesn't know, with the game that was in it, we couldn't really go to the away end because you're going to have... Well, as it happened, it probably would have been easier to get onto the pitch from the away end than it turned out to be from the where we had to sit. But we had to sit right in the front row of the main stand, like right beside the dugout. It's a horrendous place to sit for a game of football, for obvious reasons. But I was the same. I just completely froze. First of all, I was convinced the flag was going to go up.
Yeah.
That was the first bit. And then when there was no flag, I was just like, all the blood rushed out my body.
I didn't know what to do. Did you ever see Talladega Nights where he puts his hands up in the interview? He was like, what do I do with my hands? That was literally me. I was like, what do I do? What do I do?
Dazzler, we've celebrated quite a few goals up and down the country this year. We celebrated a great one up there earlier in the year on the Bank Holiday Monday. I can't put into words what the feeling was when there was no flag and the ref pointed to the halfway line to say it was a goal. But can you go any way towards trying to explain what it felt like, just for you even?
It's this horrible mix of relief but apprehension, because the relief could be very short-lived. Like, the game's not over. It's not the full-time whistle. So it's this unbelievable joy, but also the immediate realization that there's probably another 10 minutes of football left, even more as it happened. But it was just amazing and beautiful. And it was like a weight off completely. Like, you're just pure emotion. There's no thought going through your head. It's just sheer ecstasy. And you're not really able to compute what's happening around you. Like, I don't know how I got from where I was to where I ended up, but I just remember seeing Harry Wood walking by, putting his jersey back on and screaming, they were giving me shit all game. They're giving me shit all game. Explaining. I just started thinking it was surreal. Like, surreal is the best way to describe it, because you're experiencing it, but it also is like you're not experiencing it. And then my first thing was I went to find Ben to get him away from where we were, because a load of Derry fans ambled in and they didn't take very kindly to the Shells staff, officials, whatever, celebrating. So get out of there, get as close to the dugout as possible, and let's ride out the next few minutes. And I tried to get near Mero because he always has a stopwatch, so he would be able to tell you how close the game is to ending. And I probably was asking him every 4 seconds, to be honest.
Well, it's funny you say that, because Graham Watson, and I know just there when you were saying you were finding Mero to, because he usually has the stopwatch, when you start saying that, I know Graham Watson is listening, because I am not exaggerating, every 10 seconds, hey, Doody, what's on it? Doody, what's on it? What's on it? Like, Graham, there's 6 seconds have gone past since you asked me last. Will you just go away for a minute? But you're saying there about it got a little bit of antics, as Mero would say, when we scored. Some welly in the Derry crowd got very annoyed that we celebrated, but forgive me for celebrating a goal that might have won us our first league title in 18 years, but it got a bit kind of nasty. The stewards had to move in, the usual. And I just remember opening the gate to the dugout and being like, I'm getting into that tunnel because that's going to be the safest place I could be. And I just remember saying, I said it out loud. I didn't mean to say it out loud, but I just went, I can't do this. Like, scurried through the dugout and just stood in the tunnel. And that was my base then until full time. But then I go back to this with you, because we've said it so many times this year. I didn't feel like we were going to concede. Even when 7 minutes went up, and I know Boydy went down injured, but Jesus, 7 minutes was a real push. Was the longest 7 minutes of your life?
Yeah, 100%. The first thing I did, and it's what I do at every game, if I'm on the pitch ready to record, at full time, I'll always take my phone out and have the stopwatch on. And every, I'd say, what felt like 5 minutes, I'd look at it and be like, right, it's been 15 seconds. But I just, I don't know, every time the ball went into the box, I was like, this is our bread and butter. This is what we've been built on all year for the last 3 years. This kind of defensive stuff, like, you could just see Joey O'Brien, and I was like, if that man is confident, I'm as confident as anyone. And he just looked like every ball was going to be dealt with, and I just knew we'd get there. I don't know, it's just pure ecstasy, pure adrenaline that you're working on. And I just didn't, no matter how many good balls they put into the box, and let me tell you, they put a good few in, I just didn't feel like they were going to score from it.
No, it goes back to that thing. They're just a bit soft, really. Like, they very little kind of... If it was... I honestly think a Dundalk or a Drogheda would have put us under more real pressure for the last 7 minutes than they would have. They just, I don't know. They'd packed it in at that stage. Even their subs were very, like, all right, here we go. They brought in a couple of young lads. Obviously, they won in the cup final, but... Like, as you say, Ben, like, Paddy Barrett and Cam, they're going to deal with that all day, really. And although Paddy gave me a couple of heart in mount moments when he was needed, he came to the fore, everyone did. But, Dazzler, I'm going to give you now the biggest challenge.
Oh, no.
Final whistle goes. What happens next for you? What was your process? What did you do?
I don't really recall. I've pieced it together from the tape, to be honest. That's the I was around that area. Ben had gone on the pitch, so I tried to find him, but I couldn't find anyone. I was just kind of then running aimlessly around, and like, right, I need to stop running here aimlessly around and find someone. And it was just face after face after face, and they were just etched with, like, joy. And I was looking for Ben, I couldn't find him, and then the pitch got really busy, and it went too quick. It's the only regret that you'd have from the whole day is, like, that hour from full time, maybe it's an hour and a half, it just, slow it down, repeat it. In a weird way, I would have loved to never leave the place, but just seeing people's face was nice. And I think after a minute or two, you get control out of yourself, and you kind of know where you're going and what you're not running around aimlessly anymore. And just seeing people who were genuinely there for very, very, very miserable days, and just seeing how happy they were. And there was a lot of grown men tears. There was a lot of... It was a lot of hugs, a lot of fist pumps, a lot of kisses, and it was just amazing, genuinely amazing. I hope I'll be able to remember it in more vivid detail, but it just feels like a big blur.
A blur is probably the best way. Like, as you say it there, it was like a really good night out, and that over the days after it, other things start to pop into your head, and you're going, Jesus, yeah, that happened, that happened, that happened, that happened. But for whatever reason, by the time I got out onto the pitch, it felt like every face I seen was, like, as you say, like those poor souls that were around when nobody wanted to be around. It was like they just, I kept locking on to these specific people. And I was like, Jesus, I just never would have seen it coming. It still definitely hasn't kind of sank in. But Ben, you must have had some fun going through all that footage over the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's probably some of the most enjoyable stuff I've done. I said it this week on socials. It's probably the thing I'm most proud of, was going through that stuff and, you know, helping make something from it, because just the joy you see on people's faces, the players, you just see how much it means. And it's really hard to sum it up. Like, it was very difficult to do, just purely because how emotional I was going through the clips. I know that might sound a little bit weird because you're going through stuff that you've lived through, but it was just incredible to see everything. And every time I go through a clip, I find something new. And I was just happy, to be honest, to be able to get enough to put something good together, to help put something good together, because to be fair, I did a fair share of celebrating myself. A lot of the clips are just either a player or me screaming each other's names and an embrace, and I kind of forget I have the camera, or someone would come up to me and I forget I had the camera on, and instead of trying to shoot something, I just hug them and cry. I felt like every time I try to compose myself and go and get a few shots, I just see someone else and start crying.
That, you know what, that sums up perfectly. That I said this to a couple of people on Saturday at the homecoming, that it felt as though every time I gathered myself and I kind of composed myself and I was like, right, I'm okay. Like, I can start trying to help or do something useful here. And then somebody else would come up to you and you just completely lose the plot. Like, I, for whatever reason, I, when the full-time whistle went, I had Johnny Watson behind me because there's steps up to the dressing rooms in the Brandywell. And I was standing in front of Johnny. And when the full-time whistle went, I just grabbed Johnny's head, kissed him on the head, and told him the game was over. And for whatever reason, I went up to the tunnel, or like up to kind of where the dressing room meets the tunnel, because I was saying, I'll stand here and I'll try and get video or photos of the players coming in. Because I had seen the pitch invasion. I said, there's no fucking chance Ben's getting in here with that camera for a while anyway. And then I just didn't take the phone out. I was just standing there on my own for ages. And I still had managed to keep it together. And then of all the people, Skins was the first person I seen. And I just burst into tears. Like, I mean, I sobbed like a baby. And so did he. And it was like, of all the people, like the players and all were there, but Skins got my full outpour of emotion. So, sorry about that. And he ended up with a soggy old shoulder after me, snotting and spluttering all over it, but it was one of them things where just you calm down, you'd see somebody else, and it just all go off again. It's just like a big, massive blur. And then, bleeding, your woman from RTE came over to me and was like, I need Mark Coyle, I need Mark Coyle. And I was like, well, there's about 600 people that are mobbing him out on the pitch there, so good luck getting Mark Coyle. And then every time she seen me, she kept going, I need him, we need him for interview, we need him for interview. So I was like, right, here, I'll look for Dazzler, because that's his department. You are just in a sea of bodies as well. So
I did. There was no work done. I was. Remember at one stage I was sitting down and I had a beer that I'd half thrown on people and was drinking and it was well flat. And I was trying to just have 1 minute. And someone came up to me and goes, "Oh, this interview's happening on the pitch. Should you be there?" And I was like, "No."
Doesn't matter. There's nothing anyone can say now to kind of get us in trouble.
Say what you want. I bumped into someone on Saturday. I can't remember who. It might have been John Murnock. On the pitch afterwards, and he described it really well. If it's not, I apologize, but he said it's like you haven't seen people in 20-30 years, because you just get excited to see people that you see every week, you see up and down the country every week, you've seen them for years, but you see them for the first time after you win it, it's just like you've never seen them before, you haven't seen them in a long time. And it was that was the feeling, like you're seeing people. And they've had so much shit, and you know how much shit they've had, and you know they could have packed it in at any stage over any number of years, but they've stuck around, and one moment in Derry is worth all of the shit. And I thought that was a good way of describing those little interactions on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, do you know what? That's actually, if it was Murnock that put it that way, that is the perfect way of, because it was like, I've been there before when everyone charges onto the pitch and then you kind of lose the people that you're always there with. And it was like you could see little groups of people starting to reunite, like with those people, they've been on buses up and down the country or trains or in cars. Like, I didn't see any of yous for ages after the full-time whistle. Then it was like I think I seen Old Smith first, and then I seen Reggie, and like you're crying every time you see somebody like that. And thing was the same for everyone. You just seeing those faces that you've watched some grim, grim stuff with, and just that outpour. I think the person that made me cry the most was actually Gano, and he probably doesn't even remember saying it, but I said something to him like, Gano, you don't know what this actually means to everyone. And he was like, I do know what it means to everyone, and that's how we won this. And I was like, geez, that's a Mad El Ta. Like, the Gano's been there, he's done it. That was that title 10 or 11
for him? 11, one of them.
Yeah, and like, he looked just as happy. And I know he mentioned it, he was at the LOI Central live show. He mentioned it at that one felt particularly sweet. And another member of the squad, I can't remember who it was, one of the players on Saturday said, they're like a gang of, not misfits, but they're people that weren't wanted at other clubs. So, Ben, how big a part do you think that has to play in getting over the line in the end, I suppose? Like, we got it to a point where we had the advantage, but there was a stage where it didn't look like we'd get there. And then those last three games, everyone just pulled their socks up and got through it. But do you buy into that thing of, it's a lot of lads that nobody wanted, and it's like Duffer, the person that nobody likes, got them all together and turned them into league winners?
Yeah, I think so. I think you just have to look at it. It's been a pretty much a siege mentality all year. I know people can make their jokes about it and be like, oh, their worst enemy is themselves. They're only fighting with themselves. But I think it absolutely plays a factor. You look at some of the players in there and where they were and where they are now. Like, Mark Coyle is a league-winning captain, whereas a few years ago, a lot of people said that Mark Hoyle has taken a massive gamble on full-time football and they don't know if it'll work out. Similarly to Sean Boyd as well, people have given up on Boydie. Look at JJ, even look at John O'Sullivan recently, how he was treated. I think it just shows with the right environment, you can get so much from them. And we got absolutely everything from them. They gave literally their all. A lot of them, I know, at times played through pain, played through injury. Evan Caffrey was a big one last season. Like, these lads have given everything. So they absolutely deserve this.
You've mentioned there, Ben, Mark Hoyle. If anyone couldn't get a ticket, blame Mark Hoyle, because the whole of Burt, I think, was at that game on Friday. There was just an endless amount of Coyles there. I've never seen the likes of it. I seen him over talking to this, like, I thought it was like a group of people that were leaving the ground or something like that. I was like, oh, it must be Derry fans, like, wishing them well or something like that. It was the family. The whole lot. There was about 60 of them.
Yeah, there's no Derry fans wishing him well.
No, definitely not.
That man got some abuse from the Derry fans.
That was incredible. It was just a great place to win it. Dazzler, I was surprised. I didn't think 2019 would ever be topped. But as far as I'm concerned, the final whistle last Friday night was the best moment of my life. Was it as good as 2019 for you?
It's better. It is better. It's the scale of the achievement. 2019 was a personal success for Shelburne Football Club, for the group involved there. But it's night and day, I think, in terms of the achievement of it. It's remarkable. And I think it's the greatest achievement in the history of the club. And that's not recency bias. Like, if you look at arguably our greatest ever team, it probably is that mid-noughties team. You look at maybe Jason Byrne at the time, he was the best player in the country, even going back a bit further, like Shero, Wezo, Gago, they were all players that could saunter into any team in the whole country. Owen Heary the same, Dave Rogers the same, Stewie Byrne, Jim Crawford. Like, in that time when we won leagues, we had the best players, we had the biggest budget, we had the most resources. We've done this with players that the sum of the parts is greater than the individuals. And I think that's why it is miles ahead. And no disrespect to any of those great teams that Stewie would have played with and Cheryl would have played with, but it's miles ahead because these aren't Shells, Galacticos. These aren't lads that, you know, in any other era would be icons. But in this era, having achieved what they've achieved at a time when Rovers were rampant, look what they're doing in Europe. Derry are on the ascendancy coming back. Pats have the former Ireland football manager in their dugout and a massive budget. To do it now, nothing touches it. It's either inside the club or outside the club. It's the greatest single achievement in Shelburne history. And it's probably the greatest kind of sporting success story in Ireland in the last 10 years. Like, in an Olympic year, there's no bigger sports story than what Shells have achieved, I think.
Ben, biggest... It's definitely the biggest League of Ireland upset. One of the biggest Irish sporting stories there's been.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the numbers are there to back it up. RTE's viewership, was it 400,000 at a peak? Like, that's insane, especially for the league that 5-10 years ago, no one wanted to touch. It was kind of just the ugly stepchild of Irish sports. Like, it was the one you don't go near because there was nothing to it. Now, it's literally box office stuff. It's a Hollywood story. It's a fairy tale. Like, I absolutely would agree. I think it's up there. When you look at Irish sporting achievements, it has to be number one, probably, unless I'm open to correction, but everything that goes into it just makes it that little bit more special, and that, I think, just makes it number one.
We're not going to, on this episode of the pod, we're not going to go into next season yet and all the comings and goings that I'm sure will happen, and there'll be loads of time to address all that kind of stuff. What I will lean on, Dazzler, is the Reds are back in the Champions League, and you're seeing with Rovers this year, obviously, how important that Champions League tie is. The Champions League music back in Tolga, and I know that's a bit of a taboo thing now, you know, people boo the Champions League music, blah, blah, blah. But it's the specific thing I remember from, like, the early 2000s when we were playing in Europe year in, year out. Hearing that Champions League music in Tolka Park is a very, very different animal. But, like, we had such a good time in Europe this year. What's Champions League going to be like?
It'd be amazing. It'll be absolutely brilliant. It's the Champions path is really important, because if you can get through a round in Europe, does that guarantee a group stage football or league stage football?
No, it guarantees you a playoff for it.
To get into it, right.
Well, yeah, look, to get into a group stage.
That's a good place to be in. Look, I think Rovers have 5 million in the back pocket from their European exploits already this season. I don't think you're shattering anyone's illusions to say we're probably miles ahead of where the club should be in a rebuild process. Like, to have a title by the end of year three, 7-4, 1-1, 25-1 start of the season, like, it doesn't happen, it shouldn't happen, and everyone will try and tell you that it'll never happen again. But why should we accept that? Why should we accept that it'll never happen? We're told to start the season, you'd be lucky to finish fourth. Maybe Shells be in the mix for third. So I think Champions League is going to be amazing. I think you look at Sean Gannon, he'll openly tell you that nights like he's had over the last few nights probably make you a little bit greedy. Like, do those lads want to take their foot off the pedal and not want to kick on from here? Are they going to be one and done champions? Like, you can't imagine so. Look at the mentality they have. Look where it's taken them. I think when you have a group like that are together, dedicated to each other, hardworking, and above all else, understand what it means to everyone in the stands, I think they can achieve something special in Europe and in the league next year as well.
Ben, at the start of the season, all the bedwetters, all the League of Ireland box room dwellers were, Duff, he'll be gone by Easter. Shells will bottle it. No way they'll hang on. Shells are falling apart again. All that good stuff.
Shells are falling apart again.
These people not learned their lesson? Because already there's stuff in the media, there's stuff all over Twitter, group chats, everywhere you look, people are saying, they'll do well to qualify for Europe next year. They'll fall away, be Rovers and Pats all the way. Like, how naive are people?
We lost the league after the first game last season. We lost any hope of doing well after the first game this season with the 1-1 draw in Waterford. Do you not remember the head loss from that?
Yes, I do.
So, I don't know. I think, as Darren said, if you look at the players, the mentality, I think one of the best things this group has is a togetherness. Like, they're a team in every sense of the word. Like they pretty much do everything together. And one thing they do have is an amazing relationship with the fans, and they do get it. Darren is right. They get what it means, and you see that with the time they have. And one thing I will say that kind of set us apart is if you look at Rovers at points in the season, fans turned, Derry fans turned, Pats, their fans kind of turned at some points, and they didn't back their team. We cannot say that for us, because the fans were 100% behind this team every single week.
I disagree.
I was waiting for that.
I disagree.
Oh, he's at it already. This is how you Ben, on Saturday night all over again.
I jokingly disagree, but I'll tell you, the absolute, like, I thought about getting together a shit list of people who should be named for saying silly things over the year, but I said I wouldn't. But this one, I couldn't let pass. I think after we won our sixth game in a row, someone put up in the Shells fan group on Facebook, which generally isn't the intellectually minefield.
Careful.
Careful. It's not the bastion of football knowledge that maybe you think it is. You're not going to meet many Gary Nevilles.
Sorry, I just want to point out, when I say fans didn't turn, I meant in terms of support on a match day, not ridiculous opinions.
Yeah, I know, Ben, I know. But I just want to tell this story because it makes me laugh. So we win our sixth game in a row. Things are flying high. Everyone is thrilled. The Reds are top of the table. We are going to win the fucking league. And someone is wondering, is questioning, Keith Ward hasn't been involved once. Keith Ward, and no one's asked Duffer. Keith Ward, questions need to be asked. I'm ever... Oh.
Well, do you know what? It seems like a long time ago now that people were saying Duffer hadn't a clue what he was doing because he let go of Ryan Brennan and Mikey O'Connor, and there was loads of others that people probably would have happily kept, but Duffer, obviously, for whatever reason, didn't see them fitting into the plan. And, like, ultimately, he's got nearly everything right so far. But you're saying about the Keith Ward show. I remember somebody else losing their marbles because we let go of Jad Hakiki. And I love Jad. Jad is a lovely, lovely fella and a good player on his day. But complete head loss over Jad leaving.
I was mental. Like, Some of the meltdowns throughout the year have been very entertaining. And I did at times think, will I keep a list of these people so that when we win the league at the end of the season, I can tell them they're not allowed to celebrate. I've said this to Ben a lot of times. Like, I have a list of people who don't get to enjoy this because they were miserable at times for no reason.
So, Rudy, this is the person you brought on, so we don't do the, and now on to the liars bit.
No, that's why he's here. He's here because he's just going to launch rockets at everyone.
Nah, that's the end of it. But I can't not, it just made me laugh so much at the time. I remember thinking, you know, if we lost six games in a row, yeah, questions need to be asked. But
there's been some unbelievable head loss when you consider it. Like, Sean Boyd was to be launched out of Talca Park after the first game of the season because he's not good enough.
Shall we start the Justice for Boydie thing around then, Ben? That was bad stuff. People want his contract ripped up.
He's not fit to represent the club. He can't keep his head.
He's a liability. Well, he liabilityed his way all the way to a league winner's medal. So, look, it all worked out in the end.
Your pal, the JJ Lunny hater.
Oh, well, I actually, hang on a second. I got a very good message on Instagram here. Hang on now till I get it. It was from Jordan O'Reilly, also known as the Voice of Reason. And to be fair to Jordan, he was the Voice of Reason all through the season. He never got too down with the downs. He never got too up with the ups. But he sent a message and he just said, well, never in doubt. All that panic for nothing. What a feeling. Get it up, you. Absolutely everyone who wrote us off. What a season it's been, and we'll do the double next year. And then my favourite part. Someone needs to banish that lad who dissed JJ because, my God, he is a bloody good player.
A banishing is not severe enough. I think you shoot him with balls of his own shite. Make him sit in a lift and trap him with the fellow who said questions need to be asked about Keith Warren. And just leave them in the lift for 12 hours together, saying stupid football takes.
They'd combust. They would combust. Also, I can't bring myself to read these out, but an awful lot of people said very, very nice things about the pod and just the general kind of media stuff that's been put out all year. And we really do appreciate it, but I am not going to go on a full Longford / Dundalk. Ben, you're a teacher. What's the word? Tooting your own horn, but a fancy way of saying it.
Yeah, go on. What the hell?
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, you know what I mean. Thank you for the nice words, but they won't be getting read out here. What other nice stuff did I get? John Fraser said, it still doesn't feel real. I keep looking at photos and videos to relive it and remind myself that it actually happened. Shelburne FC are champions again. What a season it's been for this club. Two amazing teams bringing home two trophies. I've never been prouder to be a Red. Plenty of stuff in that same note. Somebody, Ben, you might be able to clarify this one for me. Somebody in the infamous Instagram question box said, you're a disappearing disgrace. Aimed at me.
Wow, that's high praise.
Does his name end with a G?
No, it doesn't actually. No, it doesn't. He might be in this room.
Oh, was my God, there's a ghost.
Was it Ben?
It was Ben. Ben called me a disappearing disgrace.
Where'd you go?
He disappeared off the bus home on Saturday.
All two nights. And you didn't even get a chance to disappear from night three.
Well, some of us have to drive for a living.
He just refused to turn up, Ben. I was tempted to go to his house, but
you'll be fine next season. Don't worry.
You were sending me very, very sketchy voice notes on Sunday, actually, Dazzler.
Was
he? You sent me one and you just went, you can't hide forever.
Oh, was this before I went out or after?
No, I'm pretty sure it was before you went out, but I'm also fairly sure you were still tanked up from the Saturday night. But credit where it is due, yourself and whoever else put the homecoming together. It went down swimmingly. You can be honest now. When was that planned?
You were there when it was planned, about 11:45 in Owen Smith's car, ringing around. Like, you can't get wind that you're going to do that, and you also can't book sound engineers or stuff like that on the basis of, oh, we'll book you for this, but we might cancel you, because that's not how paying people work. So it was genuinely very, very last minute, very, very on the fly. I was worried about whether or not anyone would turn up. I think at 20 to 1 or 1:15, people start coming in. I was like, all right, we might get 400 or 500, and then we got 2,000 people in Talca Park. It was amazing. The running order was kind of lifted from what the Dubs do at their homecomings. You bring the players out in small little groups, little MC chat. Now, everyone was genuinely asked very last minute to be part of it, and thanks to everyone who did. Kieran Moran on the music. He's obviously a Shells fan. He's going to games years. He came at short notice. We found a sound engineer who was on the way home from a gig, like 11:30 Friday night, who answered the call and said, would you plug in a few roaming mics for PA? Yeah, when? Tomorrow. And he agreed to do it. So, believe it or not, it was all very, very last minute, because you have to, because if Rovers get a sniff, you're planning a fucking parade, you've let down the whole football club. So, you can give Shells a lot of stick, because they left that one to the very fucking last minute.
Saturday was very different to Friday night, but just very proud, I think. Like, you're looking around, as you mentioned there, the crowd, the amount of people that turned up was just fucking out of this world. I never thought there would have been that many people. The players had a great time. I won't mention the name, but three players arrived in first, quite early, and the very first words out of the very first player's mouth was, "So no beers." So, I mean, that'll tell you all you need to know. But I just seeing the players with their families and stuff, because like a lot of the time, the manager himself will admit, probably the families don't get all the probably time they need and deserve. But really nice to be able to get them all out onto the pitch. And what I would say is the happiest man on this island, both Friday and Saturday, was John O'Sullivan. That man was just incredibly happy. He didn't stop smiling once. And considering that there was people from Bowes saying, oh, he'll be playing Leinster Senior League football, he's finished, he's fucking this, that and the other. By God, I was very, very happy for John O'Sullivan. Ben, on the way up to Derry, I, to try and break the awkward silence, said, if you could pick one person to score the goal that wins Shells the League, who would you pick? Who did you pick, Ben?
I believe I picked Mark Coyle. But I did say, and I have said for weeks, that Harry Wood will come good.
You're about 5 minutes away from that prediction being a bust, Ben.
Yes, it was very, very close. Harry Wood with an outrageous get-up on Saturday, it has to be said. Sean Gannon called him Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, I back it. The tiny sunglasses, the Cole Buxton over shirt. Yeah, big fan.
Dude, before you get to Saturday, I mean, go back to Friday and the trip home, because that was one for the ages as well.
Oh, right. There are many reasons why Owen Smith should be given the freedom of Tolga Park. Friday on the drive home was most definitely one, because Smith sacrificed himself. He didn't drink, didn't touch a drop of alcohol at all on Friday, because he drove us up and back. So for that, we will always be grateful, because there was many a phone call made on the way back. Tried to ring me dad to celebrate, and he was asleep in the back of the car after winning the first league in 18 years, and Logan fell asleep in the car. So
when my brother put the camera on him, it looks like he'd been flashbanged.
Oh, Dazzler, do you want to take us through some of the other people you called?
So I got back to the car and I had a couple of missed calls. One was from Dave O'Connor, former CEO. So I assume Dave's ringing to, you know, say, isn't this brilliant? This is great. So I ring him back and he goes, Airbus have been on. I'm still listed as the contact. Will you get fans back out of the bus? Said, Dave, I don't give a shit. They're like, they'll get home one way or another. And as it happens, the bus burst into flames. So it swings and roundabouts. But we had a chat with Dave. He was delighted. He was over the moon. He obviously played his own very, very important part of the whole story. And he has enough to write a book. And I would read that book, because it would be absolutely magic. And then there was a few other texts. So there's a few people online. So we decided to give them a call. And Duty, you can take it from there.
First up, I believe, was Jarvis first.
Well, let's go with that, because you can't spoil the other one, so you'll go with Jarvis.
Yeah, so Will Jarvis was first, who I'm pretty sure had a match the following day with Hull. So he
played Portsmouth.
And then if you look at a match tomorrow, Will, play Portsmouth.
Portsmouth aren't a real team for 5 minutes. Portsmouth aren't real, don't worry about that.
He was probably playing Call of Duty, to be fair. But yeah, he was very happy. He gave a very, I'd say it was a weird phone call to take, because he probably thought it was just going to be you. And then he was just greeted by a load of fucking screaming from the back of the car.
Rashes need to be asked about Keith Ward.
But yeah, Will was Will, really. Not a whole lot of conversation. I think he wasn't far off fucking needing to phone a friend to answer some of the stuff we were asking him, but happy to see him all the same. I'm sure we weren't the only people that rang him. And then the man who listens here every week, he watches every single game, Jack Moylan. Super Jack got a phone call as well, and he was buzzing, Ben, wasn't he?
Oh, he was over the moon, especially when we start chatting at him immediately. You could just see how happy he was, though. And in fairness, he echoed a lot of what the players said and a lot of what the staff said. He's like, no, that's that's for you. I'm happy for you. And he's talking to all of us there, I'm assuming, but he just, I've never seen him look as happy, to be honest. Like, I've seen that man score hat-tricks. I've seen him basically get a king's chair in Talca Park, and that's the happiest he's ever looked.
He was. But you know what? That seems to be a running thing with, like, players that have left under the kind of duffer reign, say. Some of them just obviously haven't fit in, or I don't know whether some people can't live with the manager's kind of demands, but anyone that has left seemed really genuinely happy. Like, when I heard Keith Ward go on to LOI Central, I was convinced. I was like, here we go. He's going to start firing shots off now as to why he didn't play and all this kind of stuff. And
it was, he sounded like he played every minute the way he went on.
He sounded as happy as anyone else did. He was like, oh no, like, the training's incredible, and like, just spoke so highly. And like, he mentioned that he wasn't drinking on Friday because he had a very important game the following day against Loughgall. And then he just burst out laughing an awful lot of time for that. But it's mad seeing so many people so happy for the Reds. Like, we're not used to that. I'm used to disgust and people being very derogatory. But an unsettling amount of people happy for the Reds. But are they genuine, Dazzler? That's the thing.
Of course they are.
More people from outside Shells. Like, you know, you're seeing people being like, oh no, I'm delighted. And everyone kept coming out with I'm delighted for the league. Oh, greatest league in the world. Yeah, it's great for the league. I couldn't give a bollocks about the rest of the league. Couldn't care less.
I have enjoyed Bo's backhanded compliments. Like, Bo's keep referring to, well, it's not about money because Shells have less than we do. Yeah. And it's not about good players because Shells have less than we do. It's about structure and focusing on the football. So they haven't had a single anything positive other than envy. But look, the envy is a backhanded compliment. I do think the manager is right when he said the country, the neutral Shells, that's a story. That's the one you want to win. People in the League of Ireland don't want us to win it. They don't. And like, Derry, everyone in Derry was as nice as pie. Couldn't have been nicer. The fuckers didn't want us to win the league. There's no doubt about that. He played the strongest team till the 70th minute and then brought on Will Patching. So don't tell me that Derry wanted us to do the league or Derry rolled over, because it doesn't stack up with what happened on Friday night in the Brandywell.
The amount over the course of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the amount of Shells people like retweeting stuff from like the start of the season, and like an awful lot of people held on to an awful lot of stuff for a long, long time. I'm not one for all that, but Ben, it was pretty enjoyable viewing, in fairness, over the course of the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think when the dust kind of settled, and I didn't see a lot of my socials till later on the weekend, but some of the head loss was box office stuff. It was really good. Like, anything I saw with worst champions ever, worst manager, worst team, great, worst captain to win the league, hook it to my veins.
I was mad.
Cry more, you big babies.
That is good stuff.
Look, I'll fly through a couple of days because we did get not as many positive comments as I thought it was going to be about winning the first league in 18 years. But a lot of people just, like Davey Singo said, 30 plus years going to Talca. Friday night was the best night of the lot, even better than Split. We haven't actually mentioned the scenes in Talca on Friday on the big screens. Dazzler, that must have been another kind of last minute job getting all that stuff together, was it?
Yeah, because it was one screen first and then 300 tickets, and it was Section E, and then it became Section D, and then we had to order a second screen. And then it's like, well, we're going to need a third screen. It was like a bit like Jaws. We're going to need a bigger boat. But look, credit to a lot of people involved in the club. The club can rightly take stick at times for some of the stuff it does. But this Friday, the Saturday, I think they were organized really, really well. I think they were fitting. I think they were fan first. I think it was the club putting the fans number one, which is what the football club should be doing 10 times out of 10. No football club does it perfect all the time, but I'd be very proud of the way the club marked it and how it was done, because it was done properly.
Yeah, as you say, rightly so, club gets stick for certain things, but everything was really, really good, in fairness. Credit where credit is due. As you say, there's too many people kind of working away in the background, but yeah, it was, people really wanted for nothing. Sean Conlon was on saying, absolutely unbelievable, what a buzz, I'm still not over it. And he said, I DM'd you about the wedding update. Do you remember this one last week, Ben? He was going to a wedding.
Yes.
He said it'd want to be his own wedding. So it turned out it was his sister-in-law's wedding. I was going to say, I was like, but he did send me an amazing photo of plenty of Shell's gear being bandied about on the dance floor. And I'd say that poor girl that was getting married was like, what is going on here? All this red stuff. But it was, in fairness to Sean, he did a good job. He said he watched it sitting, did he say at the top table actually, which makes it even funnier. But yeah, we were even represented at a wedding. So there you have it. There's a few other people who are abroad. I mean, lads, who's booking holidays in like late October, early November? I don't know. Maybe I'm too invested in the Reds. Seamus McLean said he met Sam Bone on Sunday afternoon on Dame Street. He asked if I was in Derry. I said I wasn't. I was in Tolka, and he said it looked insane. He said, I thanked him for making us all so happy. I started to well up, and then he gave me a big hug. So there you go. If you're seeing a dishevelled man getting a hug off a very tall centre-back on Dame Street, that's what's going on. Julie Fraser's exhausted and very, very smug. And then it's just loads of other people gloating, which that's what it's all about. Reds Independent, our good friend, said, simply the greatest night of all time. That probably sums up best, really.
Yeah, that sums it up perfectly, doesn't it?
Simple and straight to the point. We do have to, even though it is a happy, happy, joy, joy pod, we need Richie Rankins. I forgot the Richie Rankins last week. Very unlike me to forget something, Ben, isn't it?
I've never seen it before, dude.
Very unlike me. But nevertheless, we'll do our good ones first because they're definitely not going to be as fun as the bad ones. So my Richie Baker is Stewie Byrne. Quite simply for the Shells gloves.
Yeah.
Which was very subtle, but magic. Loved it. Loved every bit of it. Stewie's an absolute hero. And yeah, I mean, sticking the old Shells gloves with the crest facing down so that you couldn't see them on the telly. Outrageous. Brilliant stuff. Ben, Richie Baker. I've just robbed that.
Yeah, you did, but I'm going to change it up on the fly. This bit of a weird one. Bit of a left fielder. I'm going to give it to Rory Brady. Good friend of the pod, Rory. The man that got you a new microphone sponsoring us, Stewie.
Correct.
If anyone doesn't know, Rory's the owner of the flag.
Yeah, the red flag.
I'm embarrassed by that flag. Your man from the Athletic was over last week and he texted and he's doing a big piece. He goes, do you know the owner of the flag? And I just told him no, because I didn't want Rory to be speaking on behalf of our club to the world. He has some strange views about pigeons. He doesn't think they're real. He thinks that they're for spying on us.
But anyway, Rory, I went to school with Rory, and Rory came to his first Shells game with me in 2013. So, you know, I didn't exactly bring him in the door at the greatest time in the world, but he stuck by the Reds. He stuck with the Reds. And we had a great moment at the homecoming afterwards where he came up to me, gave me a big hug, burst into tears, and said, thank you for this, because without you bringing me up here, I wouldn't have the friends I've made. I wouldn't have the memories. And it just kind of summed it up, really. The emotion of the weekend, everything, like new Reds, old Reds, we deserved it. We had our day, as someone so accurately put it.
And you know, I went looking for Brian Foran on that pitch after the game to say that to him, but I couldn't find him anywhere. So, Brian, I was trying to find you, but hell and ever. Dazzler, you're Richie Baker, please.
I think there's only one winner for this week. For Richie Baker, I'm going to give it to Jose Mourinho. Yeah, he delivered a message about what it takes to be champions. Talked a bit about the manager, what the manager did as a player and how he became a champion. And if you emulate it, you'll become a champion too. So save the best to last. Went for all out emotion. It was funny when you look back on, I think it was the Sligo game, when Tony asked the manager, is there too much emotion here? And he kind of made the point, without emotion, we're nothing. You know, and it's probably in a very, very important part of the group is that they don't all have to love each other, but they would do anything for each other. And they're so emotionally invested in the club having success and them having success. So I'm going to give it to Jose Mourinho.
I never in all my time, although in fairness, Peter Schmeichel was on this podcast at one stage, so probably, but Jose Mourinho being given the Richie Baker on the 1895 podcast, just, I don't know.
For services to Shells as well,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, get the meme, weird stuff. On to the good stuff. Now on to the liars. The Richie Winters for this week. So, I'll go first. Mine is that weapon who was in the main stand in the Brandywell on Friday, who took particular exception and decided that it was completely fine that we got pelted with bottles and coins because, in his words, it's your own fault for celebrating like that. What? We just won the league, you big fucking Wally. What are you talking about? But yeah, he's getting it because I'm pretty sure, was it his son that came down and fucking flashed the red card at Duffer? Was that him as well? The little dweeb. Well, where are you now, huh? I'm wet in the bed, I'd say.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus
I'd like
Christ.
To disassociate Shelburne Football Club and myself from Stephen Duty's comments. Like,
yeah, you're on your last warning, so you want to tread very carefully.
Careful.
Ben, you're Richie Winter, please, before we get cancelled.
Oh, well, mine's not going to make it any better. It's David Snaid.
Oh, elaborate, Ben.
I don't need to. No one knows who Shelburne are.
Ben, you better elaborate for those who aren't bothered paying €5 to listen to Ken Early. Which is, I'd say, a lot of Shells fans.
I think he had a little bit of trouble hiding his bias. And he had some choice words for Shells that I didn't really enjoy. So, yeah.
I like his work. I prefer if he supported someone than no one. And his stuff is really good.
The worst part about it, he does absolutely incredible work. Like, he is very, very, very good at his job. And I do enjoy reading his stuff. It's just, didn't enjoy that one comment.
I'm going to follow your Pats team. I'm going to give my Richie Winter to Chris Forrester. The picture was seen by the right people, but the picture wasn't seen by everybody. But after they bet us there and they were getting a bit of stick coming off the pitch, Forrester did a choke gesture into the Shells fans, as if, like, you're choking, you're falling apart here. It was photographed. It went around. People saw it. It gave a suitable lift to rub it in his face. And yeah, Chris Forrester is Richie Winter.
On that note, that's it. We're done. This is the last pod of the season. Ben, never at the start of the year could I have even dreamed that in the last pod we would be celebrating a league win. Completely outrageous.
If we listened to Mark Coyle in his first interview as club captain, we could have definitely predicted it.
Yeah, correct.
Never even mentioned that.
No, we
you
didn't.
Should mention that. That's a good story. People get a good buzz out of that.
Yeah, the start of the season, we obviously Coyler was named the captain, and we did a little sit down with him, myself and Ben, and I basically asked him, like, you know, what was the target, what was the goal for the season, and he asked, could we stop recording for a second, and basically said, we're challenging for the league, we want to win the league, but, you know, should it be out there yet, or should it not be? So anyone who doubts that from minute one of game one, Shells, the players and staff were out to win the league. Anyone who doubts that, me and Ben can confirm that before a ball was kicked, that was the plan all along. So this isn't something we stumbled into halfway through the season. I was like, oh shit, all of a sudden we're top. It was the plan. It was always the plan. So in Duffer we trust. We haven't even mentioned Duffer and the magic that he has produced over three seasons. Unheard of success in this league with those. Look, we're hardly, we don't have the begging buckets out, but we are by no means dishing out massive money. And to do what he's done in a short space of time, as you mentioned earlier, Dazzler, way ahead of schedule. Just incredible. Dazzler, you're lucky. I was about to say you're lucky you get to deal with the manager on a weekly basis. Would you call yourself lucky? Is that the right word?
I think we're all lucky that he's the manager of Shelbourne Football Club. Like, I don't think there's been a more influential figure in the history of the club, and that's a big statement with how much and how much of himself. Like, all he lived and arguably died for the club, but I think Duffer is probably the single most influential figure we've ever had. So yeah, he's been brilliant. He's been brilliant to deal with. He's bought into it 1,000,000%. He's the most Shells person I've ever met involved in a first team, because usually people, you know, come and go. It's very rare you'd meet a Shells fan who plays for or works for the club, but he's the closest thing to a Red, and he was after the first day that I've ever come across.
And I actually forgot to mention, during the celebrations on the pitch on Friday, there's an unbelievable photo of Duffer and Sean Boyd. It's probably my favourite photo that came out of the whole, any photo that was put anywhere was that one, where Boydie is just in tears of joy. An incredible, incredible photo. I'm not sure who took it, so I can't even give credit for it. But
Simon Crowe.
It was Simon, was it?
I think it was Simon.
Yeah. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. But all good things come to an end, including the pod.
Can I do one more mention?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
One more mention, an honourable mention. I thought I was all cried out, then I saw him and I burst into tears and I hugged him. Owen Smith has been involved longer and done more than any of us for the club. He was involved way before I was, way before Ben was, way before you were. He's been there for the absolute worst days and kept coming back. He was there during COVID, during lockdown, went all around the country and has done, sacrificed an awful lot to be involved in the club. So I wanted to give him a special shout out, because the stuff we do is probably very visible. You see the pod, you listen to the pod, you hear the interviews, but the stuff he does consistently across a very, very long time is unmatched. And the loyalty and the love and the amount he's given to the club is worthy of a special shout out, because he's an amazing person.
I can't top that. I literally can't top that. You've put it perfectly. He was here doing stuff when nobody wanted to be. So here. Owen Smith should be given the freedom of Talca Park. But have you any more honourable mentions?
Thanks to you both. I know, Duty, you don't want to read out all the nice messages, but you probably sacrificed a lot, Ben, as well. God knows what time Ben's body clock is severely affected by having to upload manager videos at God knows what time of the night.
Came to Will Jarvis.
Yeah, so no, yourselves, because it's a lot. You are away from home a good bit. You do have to, you have to be at grounds early and you leave them almost after everyone else, so it's a massive, massive, massive commitment. And I don't know if people notice, because someone asked me the other day, just, geez, you'll get a few bob extra now next year. None of us get paid to do this. Maybe we are mental, but there's no money for it. We do it for the love of it, and I don't know about you, but I get more than I give, so as long as they'll keep having me back, I've nowhere to go. So thanks to you both, Ben, Duty, for what you do, and he's not here, but Reggie as well. Unbelievable.
And we've ended it on a big love-in, huh? What better way to bow out? But we're bowing out of season as league winners. Who would have thought it? But the Reds, back top of the pile, the team to beat. Thanks to everyone for listening all year. I'm sure we'll speak to you next season.
Questions need to be asked about Keith Ward. I want answers.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.